those nights. Thank you for tuning us in and making us a part of your Sunday. You're listening to Skylights with Ariel on WUVT FM, Blacksburg.
life standing still, and your soul's confused, and you cannot find what road to choose. If you make mistakes, you can't let me down.
Let me down.
I will still believe. I will turn around, and you know that.
Together we'll survive through the haste and hurry.
I'll be at your side if you feel like you're alone. You've got somewhere to go.
Thank you for that. Thank you for the applause. The Coors with At Your Side, comforting music here on WUVT-FM Skylights. Before that, we heard Clannad with Coinlit Gas an Famhair from Magical Ring. Before that, we heard Menham Steamroller with The Seven Stars of the Big Dipper. And we have more comforting music coming up for you from Chris Williamson, Mary Chapin Carpenter. Coming up next here on Skylights. But first, Venture Out could be your outdoor connection. The remaining schedule of trips includes rock climbing, whitewater rafting, canoeing, paddleboard, and more. If you are planning an outdoor adventure, their rental center can provide you with everything you need. You can stop by 123 Squires for more information on Venture Out. As I said, more music coming up for you. And we have Chris Williamson next on Skylights with Ariel.
Open mine eyes that I may see glimpses of truth thou hast for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me. Spirit divine.
And tall trees and stars overhead, and the sound of the world through the screen. But now you sleep with the covers pulled over your head, and you never remember to dream. You think you're just standing still. One day you'll get up that hill. In the age of miracles, there's one on the way. Greenland is melting, the west is on fire, but don't ever stop praying for rain. It's a curious place between hope and desire. Different gods, but the prayer is the same. A thousand new storms seem to form on the breeze, drowning all living things in their paths. When a small southern town finds a rope in a tree, we're all once again trapped in the past. It seems we're just standing still. One day we'll get up that hill. In the age of miracles, there's one on the way. Through space with the greatest of ease, we can land in the dust of the moon. We can transform our lives with a tap of the keys. Still we can't shake this feeling of doom. But I walk to find monks pouring into the streets, marching thousands strong into the rain. Now if courage comes to rest in red robes and bare feet, I will never be fearful again. If I'm just standing still, one day just standing still. One day we'll ride up that hill. In the age of miracles, there's one on the way. There's one on the way. There's one on the way. There's one on the way.
Sometimes you find something strong you can be.
So this is Weight of the World from Live and Learn by Mac McAnally. I thought that'd be good to end with. Mary Chapin Carpenter before that with The Age of Miracles from the CD of the same name, and Fields of Gold from Songbird by Eva Cassidy. Song of the Soul started us out. That was Chris Williamson from The Changer and The Changed. Thank you for tuning us in and making us a part of your Sunday. You've been listening to Skylights with Ariel on WUVT-FM Blacksburg. Stay tuned for Andy Morikawa coming up next with Talk at the Table.
Welcome to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. We're coming to you from the studios of WUVT-FM Blacksburg and Squires Student Center on the campus of Virginia Tech. This is student-operated, listener-supported radio for the New River Valley community. On Talk at the Table, our guests help us understand the rich diversity of the New River Valley and its connection to the broader network of people building community globally. The discourse, always interesting, sometimes challenging, is civil, and the guests are all friends and neighbors. We're taking calls today. If you have questions for our guests or observations to share, give us a call, 540-231-9888. That's 231-9888. Our guests in the studio today are Alex Dekow and Itzo Bukvic, and we'll be with you in just a second. And welcome. You're listening to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. I'm here in the studio with my guests, Alex Dekow and Itzo Bukvic. Alex is an assistant professor of French at Virginia Tech. He's also a bilingual poet and a translator who works in both French and English, and he's going to be reading selections from his two books, Caramboles and Trial Balloons. They were published in 2008 and 2012, respectively. Itzo Bukvic is currently working at Virginia Tech as an associate professor in music, composition, and technology. He's the founder and director of the new Digital Interactive Sound and Intermediate Studio and the world's first Linux laptop orchestra, LORC. And as a head of the Integrative Mind and Performance Through the Arts, Creativity, and Technology Impact Studio, which is a part of Virginia Tech's newfound Institute for Creativity, Arts, and Technology, ICAT. Welcome, Alex, and welcome, Itzo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you guys here. I'm interested in talking to you about the work that you both do here at Tech. You're both teachers, I thought one way we could get oriented with our listeners is for if somebody were observing you of, say, a week or a day here at Tech, even at this busy time of the semester, what would they see you doing? What occupies you as somebody would watch you? Maybe somebody's shadowing you. Why don't we start with you, Alex?
Well, I would probably be sitting at my computer most of the time, working on preparing for classes or working on various creative projects or research projects. Probably wandering around with large quantities of books under my arms.
And the courses that you're teaching?
This semester I'm teaching a literature survey course, which is the third in a series of survey courses. So deals with literature from the French Revolution onward.
Mm-hmm. And who are the students in your class?
Who are the students in my class? French majors, typically. The class is taught in French, and we look at the literature in French. So those are French majors.
Any non-majors, non-French majors?
Well, there are I've taught classes with non-French majors in them, of course. But this particular class, no, it's all French majors.
I see. Okay.
A lot of the French majors are typically double majors. They'll be doing something else in addition to French. So I have a French in religion and culture. I have a French and I've had French in engineering, French in biology, French in all sorts of things.
Okay, great.
International studies, that sort of thing.
All right. And Itzo.
I guess if somebody had to follow me around,
right,
they would be probably observing a random motion of a headless chicken.
Uh-huh.
Trying to survive the last couple of
or
weeks.
Or flames coming out of your head.
That's right. Trying to survive the last couple of weeks of semester. Kidding aside, I mean, I guess things get progressively more intense and for both faculty and students. So I think that's just part of the sort of life here at the university as we approach the other semester. But as far as the tangible things are concerned, this semester I teach computer music and multimedia design course, which I created approximately 7 years ago when I came here, and also a Linux Laptop Orchestra Ensemble. So both courses are open for all majors. In other words, I mean, we do certainly cater to music technology majors, but also openly encourage students from across the campus to engage in the coursework, in part because I firmly believe that there's no such thing as separation between the arts and sciences, and also, more importantly, that magic can happen when we have people from various disciplines converging together and working on a common goal, or what we commonly refer to as collaborating. Apart from that, just like Alex, I'll be sitting a lot in front of my computer and probably debugging something in LORC because something is not working quite right, or preparing my next lecture.
Right, and LORC being the laptop orchestra.
Yes.
Right. You know, both of you, in a way, are, you're both about creativity and the arts. Alex, you're a poet, translator, and when we were talking earlier, before the show, you talked about the two books that you've written, the two books of poetry that you've written, and there, one of them has a poem in French, mm-hmm. and the poem in English, and you made an interesting statement that I wanted to follow up with you on. You said you didn't necessarily translate the poems from French into English, but that you rewrote them mm-hmm. in English. What's the difference?
What's the difference? Well, I don't. There's no intention to be faithful to the original. If I find something works better in the other language, then I can digress from the original, shift the original as much as I like to fit my agenda in that language.
So
rewriting means that I'm using the original, as it were, as a kind of trampoline to create a new poem. Sometimes they end up fairly close, fairly similar. Sometimes they end up very, very different.
Right. And I hope you're going to be reading at least one, perhaps more, of your poems for mm-hmm. us today, both in French and English, and kind of walk us through that.
Sure.
Okay. All right. And then Itso, the Laptop Orchestra. You were just in Philadelphia.
Yes.
At what, Temple or...?
Princeton, then Drexel, and then Temple.
And then Temple, and you did a performance. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I guess to take a small step back, you know, Laptop Orchestra came into being both as an experiment, but also as a sort of aspiration to create something that's that has an aim of affirming itself as a professional ensemble beyond its educational potential and its research potential. So as part of that mission, we try to tour, you know, at least once a year, if not more often, as opportunities arise. And so this most recent tour was a result of a commission that we received from the Temple University's Vice Provost for the Arts that essentially commissioned a new work, which essentially stems from a collaboration with Julian Harris and Jae-hoon Lin, two magnificent dancers at Temple University. So, last week we had approximately 4-day tour, you know, starting with Princeton University, then going to Drexel in their Excite Center, which is in many ways very similar to what we have here at Virginia Tech, ICAT, and then finally concluding with the premiere at Temple University mm-hmm. on Friday.
So for listeners who have really no idea what you mean by a laptop orchestra, I'm sure our imaginations are running wild right at the moment trying to figure out what does a laptop orchestra look like and how does it work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, while we do have some answers to it, the most exciting thing about it is that we don't have all the answers. So, and that's where the research component comes into play. And so what we do know so far is obviously we do have each performer has a laptop with them. We also couple that laptop with Wiimote, our Nintendo Wiimote controller. The reason being that we want to capture human gesture and motion, choreography, and then convert that into music and sound. We also couple it with Linux operating system as well as our own in-house software for sound and multimedia production. More specifically, sound, real-time interactive sound and multimedia production with low latency being top priority. In other words, the time between the moment when somebody moves a Wiimote and the moment when the sound comes out of the speakers has to be brought down to minimum so as to allow the greatest expressivity. And so laptops are networked. We can do crazy things like having one conductor, no conductor, or everybody being a conductor in some context. We can change instruments, each other's instruments, due to our own actions. So you could think of it in terms of, in conventional terms, you're sitting in an orchestra, you're playing your whatever instrument, let's say trumpet, and then you play that note C, and when you hit it, suddenly the player next to you disappears in a puff of smoke, and there appears a person with an accordion or something else. So basically the idea is that while that might sound silly, it's also, you know, potential for being very expressive, you know, to the extent where things that may have not been possible or practical before now are possible. And just like it has been the case for eons, whenever there was a new technology around, artists always embraced it and explored it to see how that could further enhance their creativity and their artistic output. Mm-hmm. So I think in that respect, that's exactly what we're looking for in this context.
Mm-hmm. So another vehicle for creativity and innovation.
Yes, and in many ways, collaborative music making. Perhaps, perhaps there's another component that's just as important, and that is we use these hemispherical speakers, which are actually fashioned out of IKEA salad bowls. And the reason why we did that is twofold. One is we want to have the ability for each performer to sound out their contribution from the location where they're located on stage, so that we can harness that expressive power of spatial awareness that is so present in great artworks of traditional orchestra, but are, you know, conspicuously absent in a lot of contemporary music that relies upon the conventional PA systems on the edge of the stage, where we don't really connect the spatial presence with their oral spatial presence, right? And so that's one component. The other component is, of course, doing so in as affordable fashion as possible, because part of our research also deals with K through 12 education opportunities and outreach.
I had a question for Ito, which is, what role does improvisation play? In other words, you could have something that's mapped out from the start, right? And you have, mm-hmm. you know, people have their sort of protocols that they follow in order to build the piece together, or you could have an improvisational model. How do you negotiate that?
That's a great question. I mean, a lot of that is sort of discovery based, but I'm a firm believer into structured improvisation, which is a kind of a balance between, you know, something that's completely composed and something that's at least to some extent aleatoric in its nature. So you could think of it almost in a way of being a counterpart to a traditional jazz ensemble. There are opportunities where things just happen just as they should, and there are opportunities where individuals can really, you know, express themselves fully in terms of, again, within some confines and boundaries. But, you know, I think that kind of ability allows students to experience, you know, sort of both worlds without necessarily having had any musical education or experience prior to that. And because that's another opportunity that Laptop Orchestra affords us. Just because you had 20 years of piano, that doesn't make you any more better at playing in the Laptop Orchestra.
You're listening to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. We're coming to you from the studios of WUVT-FM on the campus of Virginia Tech in Squire Student Center. I'm here in the studios with my guest, Alexander Dikow, and Itzo Bukvic. We're going to take a short break, and Alex, tell us the song that we're going to be listening to.
This is an etude by Scriabin, who's a favorite composer of mine. He's sort of somewhere in between Erik Satie and Chopin. Principally worked on the piano, and he had synesthesia, which means he saw sounds as colors and forms. He wrote a great deal about that. I've also been compared to this composer. My own poetry has been compared to this composer, so I have a particular attachment to him.
And let's take a listen. Back. You're listening to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. I'm here in the studio with my guests, Alex Dikau and Itza Bukvic. And during the break, Itza, you had a question that you wanted to follow up and ask Alex.
Yes, I actually gotten quite curious with what Alex just shared, which is, you know, the link between his creative work and Scriabin's, and more particularly the notion of synesthesia. So I would really, you know, would love to hear more about how that plays itself out in your creative work.
Well, I don't know if synesthesia is the, you know, I mean, what the person was referring to is this kind of asymmetry in the way that Scriabin puts a piece together that makes it sound as though it's improvised. Mm. Right? That there's something aleatory about it, even though it's actually quite tightly composed. Similarly, my own work plays with missteps and mistakes and moments of clumsiness and things like this, and sort of composes them into the poem.
I see.
How about reading us something?
Okay, most of my pieces don't have a title. Actually, I think I will read this one. This one's called Airlines. It does have a title. Overhead bins shall all carrion items engulf or underlurk the seat afront of you. Calm down now the every device. Release a vice by raise the metal flap. For floating, you may use the cushion, your arms insert with straps until your heart against it hug. And when the craft would come apart, adjust yourself the mask upon before insisting other passengers, and follow urgent lights who come alive until the hatchway most nearby, unrolling where escape could slide undone into a desperate raft. This is typically a favorite one. I'll read this one in French and English.
Okay.
Clumps of smarmy grackles splutter, quoting trackles whispered into afternoon. Melodic, like a nervous flock of laughter toads, they clash and strike a different chords together, birds of neither feather. Des quisca le criard racle les grains se le chuchoter dans l'après-midi de tracle. Le cœur nerveux se frotte et chante doucement à tire-d'aile, foule à crapaud rire, un accord aux unissons, délicat et sans façon. And I think that may be a favorite one because I talk a lot about music in it. So I talk about chords and things like that. And the way that the front poem in French relates to the poem in English are like a pair of chords, discordant chords, as it were, playing together. Mm. And that piece was actually put into music by a French composer named Jean-Christophe Marty just recently. A very interesting piece. You might enjoy it.
Interesting. Neat. That kind of reminds me also of a book that I read to my kids, Phantom Tollbooth, which just happens to be their favorite, you know, where, you know, at one point the hero, or the kid named Milo, actually conducts a symphony orchestra which doesn't produce sound but actually produces a sunrise. So it's basically a painting with colors, even though they're actually still performing as an orchestra. I kind of envision this transition between languages and adjustment that occurs almost as a form of synesthesia of its own, even though the modality has not, you know, literally changed, I guess, which is quite fascinating. So.
Synesthesia. Talk some more about synesthesia.
Well, synesthesia is actually very, very important notion in French poetry, since Baudelaire, a number of French poets who sort of exploited the concept. So there's a lovely sonnet by the French poet Arthur Rimbaud called Voyelle, which assigns colors to vowels and sort of expands the potential analogies of assigning these colors to different letters. And it's a fairly delightful little poem. So there's a long tradition of thinking about this in both language and music, I think.
Mm-hmm. And how does that show up in your work, Itza?
Well, I guess I never quite thought about it that way, you know, as in conscious effort, even though actually I do have even a piece that's called synesthesia, even though it's not necessarily toying with the concepts, it's more of sort of a metaphor in that respect. So it's like a metaphor of a metaphor. But But there are components that do play sort of part in that overall fabric, in that, for instance, in some of my works, I explore sounds that, you know, are found in nature or common everyday sounds that we face. And it is quite interesting how those sounds, when they're recontextualized, when they're removed from their source, something that we refer to as acousmatic music or acousmatic sound, how they can, you know, take on a life of their own. And I think that's the kind of the parallel that I would like to draw between Alex's and my own work, in that you take the same content but you put it in a different context and suddenly becomes something entirely different. Mm-hmm. So I guess, if anything, it's almost like synesthesia turned it upside on its head. But I think the other curious thing in that, where the synesthesia perhaps is more pronounced in my work, is when I work with multimedia content, so audiovisual content, where how do things span across different modalities? And so how does a sound pair up with a particular visual, or vice versa, or gesture or choreography?
And this is work that you're going to be pursuing in the Institute for Creativity, Arts and Technology.
To an extent. I mean, there's sort of a... I tend to think of my work as a sort of a, I guess, synergy between scientific research and artistic, you know, creativity, I guess. Even though, obviously, I spoke earlier about how I don't believe in that separation. For practical reasons, I like to describe it that way, because that's how we, as a society, function. So the idea is that sometimes there's that new technology that I require to do something creative and artistic, but at the same time, to develop that technology, I may need to do some scientific research. At other times, I could create something that's purely artistic that inspires me to do something that's scientific in its nature. So
so it's that exchange back and forth between them.
Right, it's kind of like a playing back and forth. And I think, I guess, coming back to your question, is that, you know, certainly from artistic perspective, that synergy is important. I think there's also this component of mind and body, you know, this presence in, or rootedness in the presence. You know, we had recently the Contemplative Practice for Technological Society conference here at the university, and I was very much involved in it. We had actually a laptop orchestra perform there as well. And that particular thing is very important to me, because I find the contemplative practice and mindfulness an important component of my life, as well as of my creative process. And so I think my contribution to ICAT will be sort of a balance between those two particular areas.
Mm-hmm. What draws you both to ICAT? That's something that actually the three of us share in common. We have some connection with that new institute that's going to be housed at the Center for the Arts. And for you, Alex, when you first heard about ICAT, I think it was Itzo who approached you about it. What was it that you heard that intrigued you?
It was actually a colleague that told me about Itzo, and then I got in touch with Itzo. And
yeah.
What attracted me was the idea that of taking my own work and adding some unknown ingredient to it and making it into something completely different. You know, the idea that you could go and collaborate with something and you know, transform it appealed to me. So, you know, I had, without any preconceived ideas, or any ideas for that matter, in particular, about what I might do, I decided to look into it and find out what people were up to.
Mm-hmm. And what did you find?
I found among other things, I found this radio show, and I found Itzo's musical work, which I'm interested in learning more about. Mm-hmm. For starters.
And Itzo, for yourself?
I guess since I joined Virginia Tech, I've been kind of swimming against the current in that, you know, introducing a course that essentially was, you know, geared towards the idea that we want to bring in majors from all across the campus to see how things might happen differently as a result of this truly transdisciplinary collaborative work at the crossroads between the arts and sciences.